Major Han, Reel 4. I think you were saying that you were on the train, you got up to Arras, or near Arras, and that you were at that time the squadron signal sergeant, and the CO's signaller, the squadron leader signaller. What were the main duties of the signal sergeant in the squadron?
Well, I had to coordinate all the tuning of the radios.
You were saying that you had to coordinate the tuning of the sets.
Yes, and if you were the codes, the various, I had a little machine that I carried around to each armored car.
Yes.
And tune it in myself without the operators or anybody being there.
What to tune the radio?
The radio.
Yes.
The tune I had, and make sure everybody was on net.
On the frequency.
On the frequency. In the squadron. And I used to go around and do that. If you make sure the signal codes were issued and the various other necessary documents. And then sort of be responsible really for the discipline on the air.
The radio discipline. Mm-hmm. So if someone was chatting, you would come up and say, you know.
Yes, and I would train my operators those disciplines, algebra, get them all together and run through different procedures and make sure that they were disciplined.
But were you very conscious of the risk of being intercepted? Was that part of the training?
Well, we had a lot of things in code. All the map references were written in code. Names were given in code. And we used to use the CIDEX.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask you what kind of code you used. Of course, CIDEX was the main one, was it?
Yes.
How often would you actually change the setting for that?
Oh, we used to change it every day. Different.
You'd have different grids, didn't you, for the panel with the letters and figures on it?
Yes. And that would be changed daily. Say midnight.
What about frequencies? I mean, how often did you change frequency?
Yeah, we kept the frequencies most of the time the same. Because I think there was there weren't enough of them to
you couldn't switch around too often.
Not too often.
Did the sets tend to go off the frequency?
No, they were very good.
They kept on.
One of mine set was very good.
Apart from being signals sergeant to the squadron, you're also the squadron leader's operator. What did that entail doing?
Well, you actually used to do quite a lot of talking to the troops. I did most of the talking and then you'd pass on to the squadron leader.
If he wanted to say something.
Yeah, if he wanted to say something, or he might say, you know, I tend to do this or do that, or transfers, except only to get this map reference. You see, and then
you put it on the slide there.
And then pass it on. You see, and then whatever came back, I would then write down, and then I'll tell us what I need. So I was on the air all the time to all the groups.
Now, you mentioned SlideX as one coding system. What other systems did you have?
I don't think there was a... I think there was another private type one, I think, we had.
Private? Private to the regiment or private to the squadron?
I think to the squadron or to the other operators. And I think we could use different code names for different particular people.
So you had nicknames then?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Which wouldn't say... He was major or something or other. Yeah, it could be the Fox Hunter or whatever.
Do you remember what your squadron leader's nickname was?
No. I don't know what it was. Probably get to it later on. There was something that he was called. I'm just trying to get my name.
I mean, were these normally based on personal characteristics?
Yes.
So it was a private language?
It was.
Swivel. That's a sort of unbreakable code, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no one could ever break a code like that. Do you know why that was?
I think he used to go out shooting a lot, and he was potting that in the house.
Nothing to do with playing with clay.
No. But, and he told me how in the end of the season, he was he'll probably tell you himself, he didn't.
So these are your principal roles. You've really got two functions to perform, haven't you? One really an administrative function,
yes,
within the squadron as a whole, dealing with all your radio operators, and the other one was an operational function,
yes,
which you were part of the squadron leader's crew.
That's right, yes.
Now, squadron HQ would consist of three vehicles, wouldn't it? Three Morris armoured cars.
Yes.
What would the other two be doing? Because his role would obviously be commanding.
Yeah, well, you'd have your rear link, the second one.
I see, yes.
You'd be doing the rear link.
So he would be.
Back to the gun.
Right.
And all the message that came from me would pass to him.
Yes.
And then onto the gun. And the third one, this one's our major used to have.
Yes.
He would be sort of liaising all sorts of many jobs that came up.
Was he a maid of all work?
Yeah. He would send you, if you wanted, with another troop to reinforce or anything, you could see what he did. As I became a man.
When you were Squadron Sergeant Major. Yeah. So you arrived, you were in this role, but when did you take that up? Was that before or after you'd gone to France that you were.
Before
you went to France.
Yeah, as Squadron Leader Sergeant.
All right. So that was a promotion that happened when you were in Aldershot, presumably, after you'd done the course.
Right,
okay. Just trying to get that,
yeah,
you know, in sequence, yes. So you got to Arras. What happened to you then when you detrained?
Well, I was at Little Village, only for a short time, and then we went on to the village where we stayed for most of the time, which was Pusey.
Pusey?
Pusey. S-I-X, something like that. Not far from
Pusey,
in the middle of Albert, Arras, Ilios, in the centre.
Yes. Near the old Somme area.
That's right. Well, we were right by the old trenches.
Yes. Were they still there at the time?
Yes.
I remember seeing them.
Yes. Oh, and there was still ammunition. All when you walked in the plough fields, you'd see shells, I mean, it's littered with them.
Was there anyone there at the time who could explain what had happened there?
No. Not too good cemeteries. And that area, when it rained, the mud, the streets were just like slime. I've never seen it, experience or seen it. It's slime.
Glutinous, yes. Clay, yes. Well, that.
When we got there, we were put into each group had a sort of farm or house within the village where they, about 300 yards apart from each. And I know my troop, they were 10 of us all together in a room which was about twice as big as this.
So it would be what, 24 feet?
24.
Say,
I don't think it was
24
foot square.
So 20 feet by 20 feet then, something like that.
We had issues with Palias, the store, and we laid that no furniture whatsoever.
Just a bare room.
Just a bare room. And each of them, we laid down the Palias, tools in with, and that took up the whole room. You couldn't get anything, you had to step over. And I was 10 hours in that room. And that side of me and the wash flat outside. And we stayed in that room for September, say October, through to May the 10th in the Blue Mountains.
Was the farm inhabited?
Well, not as such, that building wasn't.
Yeah. What building, what's the building of the bean? Do you know?
It was a house that had been
part of the house.
Yeah, mm. Outside were sort of a big shed. And we were on the ground floor and the transport through the floor above. Mm. And we all had to use the same hot space in the room. I say, and this there's no room whatsoever, and in the daytime we should roll up the panels and sit on there and make some. And our armor cars outside, and in the winter we had to, every 2 hours, get up, one we take it in turns, to start the armor cars with some more antifreeze.
Stop them freezing up.
That's right. Mm. And every 2 hours we got up and did that. And we had a reservist. He was the second in command driver, Charlie Stem. He'd been in the band of the regiment before the war. Mm. Yeah, before he went out of the army and came back. And he was a trumpeter. And his job was to sound the valley in this village at morning at 6 o'clock.
Must have made him popular with the locals.
Yeah, well, and then the world spread out. The village probably like this. So there'd be one up by the village hall and one on the other side of the pub.
So it'd be a few hundred yards apart.
Mm-hmm. And so he used to jump out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, open the windows, stand on the windowsill in his long johns and his vest, which he was sleeping in, and he'd go on the alley and jump back in the bed.
How did he manage to ensure that he was awake in time? Did he have an alarm clock?
There was a guard. And the guard used to come in and wake him. Because there had to be a guard. Each troop supplied its own guard. But the guard didn't start the vehicles up. There was one man who was nominated to.
So the guard was really for security purposes?
Security, but to start the vehicles up, they'd come and wake whoever was. And at the same time, he would then 6 o'clock wake up.
Was the guard just a single sentry, or did it?
Yes.
So one man on at the time.
Yeah.
Mm. How long did he go on for? Was he on all night, or did he?
Two
on, four off.
And from there, he used to go into Alba for our baths.
Yes.
A lorry used to take us back once a week, where there's the public baths. And once in a while, a lorry would take us into the house or annual to see our show that would come out from England. So Casey Fields came out.
Concert parties.
Concert party. Greenwood Lane in Meadow. And quite a number used to come out, say, about once a month until the regiment was allocated to many places. And the lorry would take you in there.
You mentioned the transport troop. What did they have?
They had, I think they were Bedfords.
3-ton Bedfords?
Yeah. Mm. And there'd be about three of those to a squadron to carry the petrol and the
ammunition. Presumably it would be petrol, ammunition, rations and other stores.
Yeah.
Mm. Were those chaps regimental? Were they from the service corps? They were regimental.
The fitters were regimental, the cooks were regimental.
The fitters. Now, presumably, this was a some kind of workshop detachment, was it? For
Each squadron had its own regiment of fitters with 12 lancers.
Yes,
and they were fairly trained, and they were rather like they were the bigger things of Rooney, because when they made Rooney,
yes,
they brought in all these regimental fitters, and they could just sort of thing, but they were 12 lancers by accident.
Mm. How many would there be? Just
be
one.
Three per squadron.
Three fitters per squadron.
Yeah, might have been only two, but I think there was three per squadron.
What kind of jobs could they do?
Well, anything that went wrong with the vehicle, they could. Driver couldn't put light.
Yes.
Come along and sort that.
Did they have a recovery vehicle of any sort?
No, I think there was only one recovery vehicle, which was the Scammer. In the regiment.
Ah. That was a regimental fitter rather than a squadron fitter.
Yeah.
But, I mean, presumably they would have a truck with various...
The squadron fitters would have a truck with 700 spares and those, and one ton truck.
Could they make things from scratch?
No.
They just replaced parts.
If they had the... but there wasn't, as I say, with the noise, there wasn't a lot of repairs necessary.
What about routine maintenance, servicing, you know, changing the plugs and oil changes and so on?
They had a weekly task to do, or a monthly task on the vehicle. The task system was used, which they used to carry out.
So it's by time, not by mileage?
By time.
And that was done by the fitters, not by the drivers?
Not by the drivers.
Of the vehicles.
Certain things. We didn't bring in the fitters really until there was something that needed to be done. Most of the stuff, like cleaning and all that sort of thing, was done by. So simple the vehicles were. You could see everything. You could see the petrol pump, you could see the carburetor, and if there was a petrol stoppage, you could see the start light. Is it full of petrol? Right, into the next. And work your way along until you found the fault.
Clear the blockage.
Not today's vehicles, where you wouldn't know where to look.
No, today you've got to have a degree in computer science. you mentioned going into Amiens, going into Arras, and you living in the village from Pucy. Presumably you must have had some contact with the local French civilians. How did you get on with them? Were they carrying on working?
Normal, as normal, and you just talk to them and that sort of thing. You didn't sort of, you weren't invited to meetings or anything like that, but you just passed the time of day and you'd go back to them and that sort of thing.
And they were civil to you?
Oh, yes. I used to take the squad in on ET.
Yes.
Quite a lot. That was one of my extra jobs.
Were you an official PT instructor, or was this just...
Squadron,
you were. Yes. So it's a third job, then?
Yes.
Yeah. Squadron leader's radio operator, signal sergeant, and PT instructor.
Yeah.
What did you do with them, then, with this PT?
Sort of
basic floor exercises.
Taking for long, it's like taking for long, and it's come down absolutely wrapped in his paint before, I think. But they've all done in good. And also, they used to get within the squad and the regiment, they used to have concert parties because we had lots of talent.
Yes.
So there's chaps who could play banjos, piano, accordions, and lots of them were natural comedians or singers, and they used to have some very good.
Did you manage to get your hands on drink for these parties?
Oh, yeah, we always paid a drink from the local cafes.
Ah.
There's no problem on that.
Were there cafes in Pucy where you...
Oh, yes. In fact, I used to still run classes while we were in France, and I used to use a cafe as my classroom. There was two, actually, I used to do in France.
To a staminaise.
Yes, and during the sort of break time, I'd bring coffee with a bit of rum in the winter water. And it was very good then.
What were you teaching in these classes?
Procedures.
Are you teaching radio work?
Stuff, yes.
Yeah, signalling work.
Yes.
Did you see?
Sometimes we used to go on to map reading, it depends on how you.
I was going to ask you how you occupied your time while you were in Pucy, you know, whether you could carry on with normal military training.
Yes, we did. We still carried on with training. We did lots of route marches as well, to keep people really fit.
This is route marches on foot rather than...
Right. Yes. Yeah, to make sure that people weren't...
getting flabby.
Yes. Apart from the PT I used to give them. And we used to organise football matches. That's the same amount of peace time there.
So the only real significant difference was the accommodation you were in.
Yes.
What could you do to try and keep warm in the winter in that accommodation?
There was no fireplace then. It's just a bunch of blankets. And I think being in a small room like that, you've got
more. Generating your own war. Yes.
What we had was the same battle vest. We had nothing. Mm. We had no different winter clothing, really, to what we had in the summer clothing. We had our battle vest.
No great coats.
We had a great coat, but there were no special by there. Mm. I think the vests, you had long johns.
Yes.
That sort of vest, but there were no, like there is today, parkas and things like that. You just, that was the coldest winter ever, I think, in 1939-40.
I think some of the infantry had leather jerkins, which helped a bit.
Yes, I didn't get them until much later. I know the infantry were issued with the jerkins, but I didn't think they were, I mean, they were sleeveless. And they were drafty.
Yes.
Behind. I didn't think much of them at all.
When did you move into battle dress? Because it would have been a change from your... from the service dress, wouldn't it?
I think that must have been about 38, I think. Because I got a picture of me in my service dress in 38.
And also a picture of, yes.
So I think it was probably just about beginning of 39, I think we probably got the battle dress issue.
Around about the same time you were getting the new armoured cars, you were getting the new uniform.
That's right, yeah.
What did you think of battle dress compared to your old dress? You did?
Yeah, new buttons to clean.
Uh-huh.
You see, it was comfortable, plenty of pockets, tactical. You could, with the other one, if you had to get on the floor and crawl in there, it'd all get caught up, wouldn't it? But battle dress,
it was more practical.
Oh, it was practical.
Now, quite a lot of units that went out to France said that, initially when they went out, they were very excited, and then nothing happened. They were just hanging about waiting, and that this caused a certain amount of boredom and demoralisation.
I don't think we were demoralised. I know we were sort of when it's going to happen, that sort of thing. But we weren't demoralised because we were kept occupied. I think it's when you've got nothing to do. Best when boredom sets in and you get demoralised.
Best to keep busy.
We always had something where we had a concert party. And I think being in little troops where you were great friends, at night when we got into bed, 10 hours in the room, and Charlie spent the day with his guitar, and he'd sing to us. We'd like to be out. And there's Charlie had a nice voice, and he'd sing all these lovely old songs, and and we were happy, and there'd always be a late puller or something, which would, and I say, couldn't be ever bored.
Did you manage to do any tactical training with the armoured cars?
Oh, yes, we did some, not to a great extent. And we, it was mainly squadron sort of tactics we were doing. And occasionally, a couple of times, went to the French army and visited them and looked at their equipment and sort of talked with them and different things.
Where did you do that? Do you remember where you went to meet the French?
I can't remember. I have pictures of it. In fact, I had a newspaper cutting until recently. I sent it up to John Clark Kennedy, which gave all the information. It was a French newspaper thing that showed pictures that I was on it. And I thought John Clark Kennedy was on it, but Arthur Gemmell was on it. And I sent it up to him after we came back from France with the red one. So I gave all the information.
What did you think of the French equipment when you saw it?
Far superior to ours.
Oh, was it?
The tanks were beautiful. Beautiful tanks, really solid, and the big guns on them, compared with our 2 pounder or 37mm. And our armoured cars, which had a bigger gun than ours, it had a driver in the front, driver at the back. So if any problem, just imagine driving away, whichever way you want to go. And they were far superior, all their equipment was far superior to us.
What about their temperament and their state of mind?
We couldn't judge, really, not being French speakers, apart from the little bit we picked up, while chatting to the local people. We couldn't sort of really get to know anyone, and that'd be wrong to form an opinion just on looks, but they always treated us with great
Did you have a did you get a chance to have a go in any of their vehicles to drive around in them?
No.
Look around in them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. As I said, we're going to be there for a day. We'll all be lined up, and we'd drive up in our vehicles as we could from wherever we were, which was some miles away. And they could look in our vehicles.
Do you think you've picked up any ideas from looking at their setup that you could apply?
No, the only thing really was obvious was the superior type of vehicle and weapon that they had, which we wish we had. That's all, no tactics or anything like that.
Did you manage to do any serious tactical exercises at all?
No, not really.
Nothing on a large scale, just squadron.
Just squadrons.
The occasional. I mean, were they very frequent squadron drives out into the country too?
Well, you could do it as up to Tribune, you take your troop out and do whatever Tribune wanted, and you could go out every day.
Yes. Wondering if you know there were any restrictions as a result of not having enough fuel or anything of that sort.
No problems like that.
Any opportunities to use the weapons?
No.
Any shooting?
No.
So you're in the field, effectively, living in field conditions, carrying on with the same sort of training as you would have been in England, except you couldn't really use the weapons at all.
Twice or three times, that they had an alert when they thought it was about to invade, and we drove up to Lambo and Lille.
Yes.
To Bay.
Yes.
And took up our positions there, ready to cross the frontier. And we did that, I think, three occasions. We packed everything up, and this is it, and we went. And just sat there for about 3 days, and then said, all right, back to you.
Just watching the frontier?
No, just there, waiting to cross the frontier.
To cross the frontier.
We didn't expect the enemy to come there. Our road was that as soon as anything happened, we'd go through Belgium, right up then to meet the enemy. And when the alert came, we were building up on the border, the other side of Belgium, that we were there ready to do, because the Belgians didn't let us in at all.
Do you remember when you first became aware of the fact that the role would be to go into Belgium and meet the enemy?
I think almost from the start.
From when you went to France?
Yeah. That was going to be our task. We went up to the Dyle and then on. And we knew that we were about to Belgium until we met the enemy.
How did that information get to you? Was there any, were there briefings at troop or squadron level?
Squadron level.
So the squadron leader told you that
that's
what you'd be doing. Were you aware of another variant, Plan E, to go up onto the ESCO? Do you remember knowing anything about that before? When you were given the order, it's time to go, how long would it take before you were actually ready to move off?
Well, this was on the 10th of May.
Well, you know, on these earlier scares too, which took a couple of hours. What did you actually have to do then when you got
to... the vehicles.
With what?
Our bedding.
Yeah.
The personal kit. The ammunition and the things already loaded.
Yeah.
And that was it. And probably rations, that's probably it, and then we're ready to go.
So it's really domestic packing, not military packing.
Yeah. And I think if you said, right, you know them in now, we could have gone in now.
So that was the normal sort of warning time, was it, for movement, 2 hours notice?
Oh, yes.
Did you know anything about the German army?
Not really.
And had you seen... You've been talking earlier on about silhouettes and so forth. Had you seen any photographs or silhouettes or drawings of German army?
Silhouettes on it, but nothing much. And I knew there was pictures of the war there.
Had you seen any activity in there?
I haven't seen anything. I haven't heard a shot fired in anger.
So I mean, there were occasions when German reconnaissance aircraft went over.
Never saw.
What about friendly aircraft, RAF or French?
No,
not a thing.
Because the new aircraft in the sky, as far as we're concerned.